going to the Hune City in a few hours, and you don't seem inclined to want us shoving into your business, I told her, as evenly as I could. I doubt Elaine does, too. Nesta stared me down, not a flicker of emotion on her face, and gave a curt nod. Well, at least she left the room. And the chair. We exchanged a rare, calm glance. But then I said, Why won't you train with Cassian? Nesta's spine locked up. Why is it only Cassian that I may train with? Why not the other one? Azrael? Him or the blonde one who won't shut up? If you're referring to Moore, and why must I train at all? I am no warrior, nor do I desire to be. It could make you strong. There are many types of strength beyond the ability to wield a blade and end lives. Amryn told me that yesterday. You said you wanted our enemies dead. Why not kill them yourself? She inspected her nails. Why bother when someone else can do it for me? I avoided the urge to rub my temples. But the doors to the library opened, and I snapped my barrier of hard air down entirely at the thud of stalking footsteps, then their sudden halting. I gripped Nesta's arm to keep her still, just as Lucian's voice blurted, You left your room. Nesta bristled, teeth flashing. I gripped her harder and threw a new wall of air around us, holding her there. Weeks of cloistering Elaine had done nothing to improve her state. Perhaps the half-riddles were proof of that. And even if Lucian was currently breaking the rules we had set... More steps. No doubt closer to where Elaine stood at the window. Is there anything I can get for you? I'd never heard my friend's voice so soft. So tentative and concerned. Perhaps it made me the lowest sort of wretch, but I cast my mind toward them, toward him. And then I was in his body, his head. Too thin. She must not be eating at all. How can she even stand? The thoughts flowed through his head, one after another. His heart was a raging, thunderous beat, and he didn't dare move from his position a mere 5 feet away. She hadn't yet turned toward him, but the ravages of her fasting were evident enough. Touch her, smell her, taste her. The instincts were a running river. He fisted his hands at his side. He hadn't expected her to be here. The other sister, the viper, was a possibility, but one he was willing to risk. Aside from talking to the shadow singer yesterday, which had been just about as unnerving as he'd expected, though Azrael seemed like a decent enough male, he'd been cooped up in his wind-blasted house for 2 days. The thought of another one had been enough to make him risk Rhysand's wrath. He just wanted a walk, and a few books. It had been an age since he'd even had free time to read, let alone do so for pleasure. But there she was, his mate. She was nothing like Jasminda. Jasminda had been all laughter and mischief, too wild and free to be contained by the country life that she'd been born into. She had teased him, taunted him, seduced him so thoroughly that he hadn't wanted anything but her. She'd seen him not as a High Lord's seventh son, but as a male, had loved him without question, without hesitation. She had chosen him. Elaine had been thrown at him. He glanced toward the tea service spread on a low-lying table nearby.
I'm going to assume that one of those cups belongs to your sister.
Indeed, there was a discarded book in the viper's usual chair. Cauldron help the male who wound up shackled to her.
Do you mind if I help myself to the other?
He tried to sound casual, comfortable, even as his heart raced and raced. So swift he thought he might vomit on the very expensive, very old carpet. From Sangravah, if the patterns and rich dyes were any indication. Rhysand was many things, but he certainly had good taste. This entire place had been decorated with thought and elegance, with a penchant for comfort over stuffiness.
He didn't want to admit he liked it. Didn't want to admit that he found the city beautiful.
That the circle of people who now claim to be Feyre's new family.
It was what, long ago, he'd once thought life at Tamlin's court would be. An ache like a blow to the chest went through him. But he crossed the rug, forced his hands to be steady while he poured himself a cup of tea, and sat in the chair opposite Nesta's vacated one.
There's a plate of biscuits. Would you like one?
He didn't expect her to answer, and he gave himself all of one more minute before he'd rise from his chair and leave, hopefully avoiding Nesta's return. But sunlight on gold caught his eye, and Elaine slowly turned from her vigil at the window. He had not seen her entire face since that day in Highburn. Then it had been drawn and terrified, then utterly blank and numb, her hair plastered to her head, her lips blue with cold and shock. Looking at her now, she was pale, yes, the vacancy still glazing her features. But he couldn't breathe as she faced him fully. She was the most beautiful female he'd ever seen. Betrayal, queasy and oily, slid through his veins. He'd said the same to Jesminda once. But even as shame washed through him, the words, the sense, chanted, "Mine. You are mine, and I am yours. Mate." Her eyes were the brown of a fawn's coat, and he could have sworn something sparked in them as she met his gaze. "Who are you?" He knew without demanding clarification that she was aware of what he was to her.
"I am Lucian, seventh son of the High Lord of the Autumn Court."
And a whole lot of nothing. He'd told the Shadow Singer all he knew, of his surviving brothers, of his father, his mother. He'd kept some details, irrelevant and utterly personal to himself. Everything else, his father's closest allies, the most conniving courtiers and lords, he'd handed it over. Granted, it was dated by a few centuries, but in his time as emissary, from the information he'd gathered, not much had changed. They'd all acted the same under the mountain anyway. And after what had happened with his brothers a few days ago, there was no tinge of guilt when he told Asriel what he knew. None of what he felt when he looked toward the south, toward both of the courts he'd called home. For a long moment, Elaine's face did not shift. But those eyes seemed to focus a bit more. "Lucian," she said at last, and he clenched his teacup to keep from shuddering at the sound of his name on her mouth. "From my sister's stories. Her friend."
"Yes."
But Elaine blinked slowly. "You were in Highburn?"
"Yes." It was all he could say.
"You betrayed us?"
He wished she'd shoved him out the window behind her. It was a mistake.
Her eyes went frank and cold. "I was to be married in a few days." He fought against the bristling rage, the irrational urge to find the male who'd claimed her and shred him apart. The words were a rasp as he instead said,
"I know. I'm sorry."
She did not love him, want him, need him. Another male's bride. A mortal man's wife. Or she would have been. She looked away, toward the windows. "I can hear your heart," she said quietly. He wasn't sure how to respond, so he said nothing, and drained his tea, even as it burnt his mouth. "When I sleep," she murmured, "I can hear your heart beating through the stone." She angled her head, as if the city view held some answer. "Can you hear mine?" He wasn't sure if she truly meant to address him, but he said,
No, lady. I cannot. Her two thin shoulders seemed to curve inward.
No one ever does. No one ever looked. Not really.
A bramble of words, her voice strained to a whisper.
He did. He saw me. He will not now.
Her thumb brushed the iron ring on her finger. Another male's ring, another marker that she was claimed. It was enough. I had listened enough, learned enough. I pulled out of Lucian's mind. Nesta was gaping at me, even as her face had leached of color at every word uttered between them.
Have you ever gone into my...
No, I rasped. How she knew what I had done, I didn't want to ask, not as I dropped the shield around us and headed for the sitting area. Lucian, no doubt, having heard our steps, was flushed as he glanced between me and Nesta. No inkling whatsoever that I'd slid into his mind. Rifled through it like a bandit in the night. I shoved down my mild nausea. My eldest sister merely said to him, "Get out." I flashed Nesta a glare, but Lucian rose.
"I came for a book."
"Well, find one and leave."
Elaine only stared out the window unaware, or uncaring. Lucian didn't head for the stacks. He just went to the open doors. He paused right between them and said to me, to Nesta,
"She needs fresh air."
"We'll judge what she needs."
I could have sworn his ruby hair gleamed like molten metal as his temper rose, but it faded, his russet eye fixing on me.
"Take her to the sea. Take her to some garden, but get her out of this house for an hour or two."
Then he walked away. I looked at my two sisters, cloistered up here, high above the world. "You're moving into the townhouse right now," I said to them, to Lucian, who paused in the dim hallway outside. Nesta, to my shock, did not object. Neither did Rhys when I sent my order down the bond, asking him, Cassian, and Asriel to help move them. No, my mate just promised to assign two bedrooms to my sisters down the hall, on the other side of the stairs, and a third for Lucian, on our side of the hall, well away from Elaine's. 30 minutes later, Asriel carried Elaine down, my sister silent and unresponsive in his arms. Nesta had looked ready to walk off the balcony rather than let Cassian, already dressed and armed for guarding the townhouse tonight, hold her. So I nudged her toward Rhys, pushed Lucian toward Cassian, and flew myself back. Or tried to. Again. I soared for about half a minute, savoring the cleansing scream of the wind, before my wings wobbled, my back strained, and the fall became unbearably deadly. I winnowed the rest of the way to the townhouse, and adjusted vases and figurines in the sitting room while waiting for them. Asriel arrived first, no shadows to be seen. My sister, a pale golden mass in his arms. He, too, wore his Illyrian armor, Elaine's golden brown hair snagging in some of the black scales across his chest and shoulders. He set her down gently on the foyer carpet, having carried her in through the front door. Elaine peered up at his patient, solemn face. Asriel smiled faintly.
"Would you like me to show you the garden?"
She seemed so small before him. So fragile compared to the scales of his fighting leathers, the breadth of his shoulders, the wings peeking over them. But Elaine did not balk from him, did not shy away as she nodded, just once. Asriel, graceful as any courtier, offered her an arm. I couldn't tell if she was looking at his blue siphon or at his scarred skin beneath as she breathed, "Beautiful." Color bloomed high on Asriel's golden-brown cheeks, but he inclined his head in thanks, and led my sister toward the back doors into the garden, sunlight bathing them. A moment later, Nesta was stomping through the front door, her face a remarkable shade of green.
"I need a toilet."
I met Rhys's stare as he prowled in behind her, hands in his pockets.
What did you do?
His brows shot up, but I wordlessly pointed Nesta toward the powder room beneath the stairs, and she vanished, slamming the door behind her.
Me?
Reese leaned against the bottom post of the banister.
She complained that I was flying deliberately slow, so I went fast.
Cassian and Lucian appeared, neither looking at the other. But Lucian's attention went right to the hallway toward the back, his nostrils flaring as he scented Elaine's direction, and who she'd gone with. A low snarl slipped out of him.
Relax,
Reese said. Asriel isn't the ravishing type. Lucian cut him a glare. Mercifully, or perhaps not, Nesta's retching filled the silence. Cassian gaped at Reese.
What did you do?
I asked him the same thing, I said, crossing my arms. He said he went fast. Nesta vomited again. Then silence. Cassian sighed at the ceiling.
She'll never fly again.
The doorknob twisted, and we tried, well, or at least Cassian and I did, not to seem like we'd been listening to her. Nesta's face was still greenish pale, but her eyes burned. There was no way of describing that burning, and even painting it might have failed. Her eyes remained the same blue-gray as my own, and yet, molten ore was all I could think of. Quicksilver set aflame. She advanced a step toward us, all her attention fixed on Reese. Cassian casually stepped in her path, wings folded in tight, feet braced apart on the carpet. A fighting stance. Casual, but his siphons glimmered.
Do you know, Cassian drawled to her, that the last time I got into a brawl in this house, I was kicked out for a month?
Nesta's burning gaze slid to him, still outraged, but hinted with incredulity. He just went on.
It was Amryn's fault, of course, but no one believed me, and no one dared banish her.
She blinked slowly, but the burning molten gaze became mortal, or as mortal as one of us could be. Until Lucian breathed,
What are you?
Cassian didn't seem to dare take his focus off Nesta, but my sister slowly looked at Lucian. I made it give something back, she said with terrifying quiet. The cauldron. The hairs along my arms rose. Nesta's gaze flicked to the carpet, then to a spot on the wall. I wish to go to my room. It took a moment to realize she'd spoken to me. I cleared my throat. Up the stairs, on your right, second door, or the third, whichever suits you. The other is for Elaine. We need to leave in, I squinted at the clock in the sitting room, 2 hours. A shallow nod was her only acknowledgement and thanks. We watched as she headed up the steps, her lavender gown trailing after her, one slender hand braced on the rail.
I'm sorry,
Reese called up after her. Her hand tightened on the rail, the whites of her knuckles poking through her pale skin, but she didn't say anything as she continued on.
Is that sort of thing even possible?
Cassian murmured when the door to her room had shut.
For someone to take from the cauldron's essence?
It would seem so, Reese mused, then said to Lucian, The flame in her eyes was not your usual sort, I take it. Lucian shook his head. No. It spoke to nothing in my own arsenal. It was ice so cold it burned. Ice and yet fluid, like flame, or flame made of ice. I think it's death, I said quietly. I held Reese's gaze, as if it were again the tether that had kept me in this world. I think the power is death. Death made flesh. Or whatever power the cauldron holds over such things. That's why the carver heard it. Heard about her.
Mother above,
Lucian said, dragging a hand through his hair. Cassian gave him a solemn nod. But Rhys rubbed his jaw, weighing, thinking. Then he said simply,
"Only Nesta would not just conquer death, but pillage it."
No wonder she didn't wish to speak to anyone about it. Didn't wish to bear witness on our behalf. It had been mere seconds for us, while she'd gone under. I had never asked either of my sisters how long it had been for them inside the cauldron.
Asriel knows you're watching,
Rhys drawled from where he stood before the mirror in our bedroom, adjusting the lapels of his black jacket. The townhouse was a quiet flurry of activity as we prepared to leave. Moore and Amryn had arrived half an hour ago, the former heading for the sitting room, the latter bearing a dress for my sister. I didn't dare ask Amryn to see what she'd selected for Nesta. Training, Amryn had said days ago. There were magical objects in the Court of Nightmares that my sister could study tonight, while we were occupied with Kyr. I wondered if the Ouroboros was one of them, and made a note to ask Amryn what she knew of the mirror the Carver so badly desired, which I'd somehow have to convince Kyr to part with tonight. Lucian had offered to make himself useful while we were gone by reading through some of the texts now piled on the tables throughout the sitting room. Amryn had only grunted at the offer, which I told Lucian amounted to a yes. Cassian was already on the roof, casually sharpening his blades. I'd asked him if 9 swords were really necessary, and he merely told me that it didn't hurt to be prepared, and that if I had enough time to question him, then I should have enough time to do another workout. I'd quickly left, throwing a vulgar gesture his way. My hair still damp from the bath I'd just taken, I slid my heavy earrings through my lobes and peered out our bedroom window, monitoring the garden below. Elaine sat silently at one of the wrought iron tables, a cup of tea before her. Asriel was sprawled on the chaise lounge across the gray stones, sunning his wings and reading what looked to be a stack of reports, likely information on the Autumn Court that he planned to present to Rhys once he'd sorted through it all. Already dressed for the hewn city, the brutal, beautiful armor so at odds with the lovely garden, and my sister sitting within it. Why not make them mates? I mused. Why Lucian?
I'd keep that question from Lucian.
I'm serious. I turned toward him and crossed my arms. What decides? Who decides it? Rhys straightened his lapels before plucking an invisible piece of lint from them.
Fate, the mother, the cauldron's swirling eddies.
Rhys. He watched me in the reflection of the mirror as I strode for my armoire, flinging open the doors to yank out the dress I'd selected. Scraps of shimmering black, a slightly more modest version of what I'd worn to the Court of Nightmares months ago. You said your mother and father were wrong for each other. Tamlin said his own parents were wrong for each other. I peeled off my dressing robe. So it can't be a perfect system of matching. What if... I jerked my chin toward the window, to my sister and the shadow singer in the garden. That is what she needs. Is there no free will? What if Lucian wishes the union, but she doesn't?
A mating bond can be rejected,
Rhys said mildly, eyes flickering in the mirror as he drank in every inch of bare skin I had on display.
There is choice. And sometimes, yes, the bond picks poorly. Sometimes the bond is nothing more than some preordained guesswork at who will provide the strongest offspring. At its basis level, it's perhaps only that. Some natural function. Not an indication of true paired souls.
A smile at me. At the rareness, perhaps, of what we had.
Even so, Rhys went on. There will always be a tug. For the females, it's usually easier to ignore, but the males, it can drive them mad. It's their burden to fight through, but some believe they are entitled to the female. Even after the bond is rejected, they see her as belonging to them. Sometimes they return to challenge the male she chooses for herself,
Sometimes it ends in death. It's savage, and it's ugly, and it mercifully doesn't happen often. But many mated pairs will try to make it work, believing the cauldron selected them for a reason. Only years later will they realize that perhaps the pairing was not ideal in spirit. I scrounged up the jeweled dark belt from the armoire drawer and slung it low over my hips. So you're saying she could walk away, and Lucian would have free rein to kill whoever she wishes to be with? Rhys turned from the mirror at last, his dark clothes pristine, cut perfectly to his body. No wings tonight. Not free rein. Not in my lands. It has been illegal in our territory for a long, long time for males to do that. Even before I was born. In other courts, no. On the continent, there are territories that believe the females literally belong to their mate. But not here. Elaine would have our full protection if she rejects the bond. But it will still be a bond, however weakened, that will trail her for the rest of her existence. Do you think she and Lucian match well? I pulled out a pair of sandals that laced up my bare thighs and jammed my feet into them before beginning work on the bindings. You know him better than I do. But I will say that Lucian is loyal. Fiercely so. So is Asriel. Asriel, Rhys said, has been preoccupied with the same female for the past 500 years. Wouldn't the mating bond have snapped into place for them if it exists? Rhys's eyes shuddered. I think that is a question Asriel has been asking himself every day since he met Moore. He sighed as I finished one foot and started on the other. Am I allowed to request that you not play matchmaker? Let them sort it out. I rose, bracing my hands on my hips. I would never meddle in someone else's affairs. He only raised a brow in silent challenge, and I knew precisely what he referred to. My gut tightened as I took a seat at the vanity and began braiding my hair into a coronet to top my head. Perhaps I was a coward, for not being able to ask it aloud, but I said down the bond, "Was it a violation, going into Lucian's mind like that?" "I can't answer that for you." Rhys came over and handed me a hairpin. I slid it into a section of braid. I needed to be sure that he wasn't about to try to grab her, to sell us out. He handed me another. "And did you get an answer to that?" We worked in unison, pinning my hair into place. I think so. It wasn't just about what he thought, it was the feeling. I sensed no ill will, no conniving, only concern for her, and sorrow. Longing. I shook my head. Do I tell him? What I did? Rhys pinned a hard-to-reach section of my hair. You have to deem whether the cost is worth assuaging your guilt. The cost being Lucian's tentative trust in me, this place. I crossed a line. But you did it to ensure the safety of people you love. I didn't realize. I trailed off, shaking my head again. He squeezed my shoulder. Didn't realize what? I shrugged, slouching in the cushioned stool. But it'd be so complicated. My face warmed. I know that sounds terribly naive. It's always complicated, and it never gets easier, no matter how many centuries I've been doing it. I pushed around the extra hairpins on the vanity. It's the second time I've gone into his mind. Then say it's the last and be done with it. I blinked, lifting my head. I painted my lips in a shade of red so dark it was nearly black, and they now pressed into a thin line. He clarified, "What's done is done. Agonizing over it won't change anything. You realized it was a line you didn't like crossing, and so you won't make that mistake again." I shifted in my seat. "Would you have done it?" Rhys considered. "Yes. And I would have felt just as guilty afterward." Hearing that settled something deep down. I nodded once. Twice. If you want to make yourself feel a little better, he added. Lucian did technically violate the rules we set, so you were entitled to look into his mind, if only to ensure the safety of your sister. He crossed the line first.
That thing deep in me eased a bit more. You're right.
And it was done. I watched Rhys in the mirror as a dark crown appeared in his hands. The one of raven's feathers that I'd seen him wear. Or its feminine twin. A tiara, which he gently, reverently, set before the braid we'd pinned into place atop my head. The original crown. It appeared atop Rhys's head a moment later. Together, we stared at our reflection. Lord and Lady Knight.
Ready to be wicked,
he purred in my ear. My toes curled at the caress in that voice, at the memory of the last time we'd gone to the Court of Nightmares, how I'd sat in his lap, where his fingers had drifted. I rose from the bench, facing him fully. His hand skimmed the bare skin along my ribs, between my breasts, down the outside of my thighs. Oh, he remembered, too. This time, I breathed, kissing the tendril of tattoo that peaked just above the collar of Rhys's black jacket. I get to make Kier beg.
Chapter 25 Amryn hadn't dressed Nesta in cobwebs and stardust as Mor and I were clothed. And she hadn't dressed Nesta in her own style of loose pants and a cropped blouse. She had kept it simple. Brutal. A dress of impenetrable black flowed to the dark marble floors of the throne room of the Hewn City, tight through the bodice and sleeves, its neckline skimming the base of her pale throat. Nesta's hair had been swept into a simple style to reveal the pains of her face, the savage clarity of her eyes, as she took in the assembled crowd. The towering carved pillars and the scaled beasts twined around them. The mighty dais and the throne atop it. And did not balk. Indeed, Nesta's chin only lifted with each step we took toward that dais. One throne, I realized. That mighty throne of those twined, scaly beasts. Rhys realized it too. Planned for it. My sister and the others peeled away at the foot of the dais, taking flanking positions at its base. No fear, no joy, no light in their faces. Azriel, at Moore's side, looked murderously calm as he surveyed those who gathered. As he beheld Kier, waiting beside a golden-haired woman who had to be Moore's mother, sneering at us.
"Promise them nothing," Moore had warned me.
Rhys held out a hand for me to ascend the dais steps. I kept my head high, back straight, as I gripped his fingers and strode up the few stairs, toward that solitary throne. Rhys only winked as he gracefully escorted me right into that throne, the movement as easy and smooth as a dance. The crowd murmured as I sat, the black stone bitingly cold against my bare thighs. They outright gasped as Rhys simply perched on the arm of the throne, smirked at me, and said to the Court of Nightmares,
"Bow."
For they had not. And with me seated on that throne. Their faces were still a mixture of shock and disdain as they all dropped to their knees. I avoided looking at Nesta while she had no choice but to follow suit. But I made myself look at Kier. At the female beside him, at anyone who dared meet my gaze. Made myself remember what they had done to Mor, now bowing with a grin on her face, when she was barely more than a child. Some of the court averted their eyes.
"I will interpret the lack of two thrones to be due to the fact that this visit came upon you quickly,"
Rhys said with a lethal calm.
"And I will let you all escape without having your skin flayed from your bones as my mating gift to you, our loyal subjects,"
he added, smiling faintly. I traced a finger over the scaly coil of one of the beasts that made up the arms of the throne,
our court. Part of it. And we needed them to fight with us. To agree to it. Tonight. The mouth I'd painted that dark, dark red parted into a lazy smile. Tendrils of power snaked toward the dais, but didn't dare venture past the first step. Testing me. What power I might have. But not getting close enough to offend Rhysand. I let them creep closer, sniffing around, as I said to Rhys, to the throne room, "Surely, my love, they would like to stand now." Rhys smiled down at me, then at the crowd.
"Rise."
They did, and some of those tendrils of power dared climb up the first step. I pounced. Three gasps choked through the murmuring room as I slammed talon-sharp magic down upon those two curious powers, dug in deep and hard, a cat with a bird under its paw. Several of them. "Do you wish to have this back?" I asked quietly, to no one in particular. Near the foot of the dais, Kier was scowling over a shoulder, his silver circlet glinting atop his golden hair. Someone whimpered in the back of the room.
"Don't you know," Rhys purred to the crowd, "that it's not polite to touch a lady without her permission?"
In answer, I sank those dark talons in further, the magic of whoever had dared try to test me, thrashing and buckling.
"Play nice," I crooned to the crowd,
and let go. Three separate flurries of motion warred for my attention. Someone had winnowed outright, fleeing. Another had fainted. And a third was clinging to whoever stood beside them, trembling. I marked all their faces. Amryn and Nesta approached the foot of the dais. My sister was staring as if she'd never seen me before. I didn't dare break my mask of bemused coolness. Didn't dare ask if Nesta's shields were holding up. If someone had just tried to test her as well. Nesta's own imperious face yielded nothing. Amryn bowed her head to Rhys, to me.
"By your leave, High Lord."
Rhys waved an idle hand.
"Go, enjoy yourselves."
He jerked his chin to the watching crowd.
"Food and music, now."
He was obeyed, instantly. My sister and Amryn vanished before the crowd could begin milling about, striding right through those towering doors and into the gloom, to go play with some of the magical trove kept there, to give Nesta some practice for whenever Amryn figured out how to fix the wall. A few heads turned in their direction, then quickly looked away as Amryn noticed them. "Let some of the monster inside show." We still had not told her of the bone carver, of the prison visit. Something a bit like guilt coiled in my stomach, though I suppose I had to get used to it, as Rhys curled a finger toward Kier and said,
"The council room. 10 minutes.
Kier's eyes narrowed at the order, the female beside him keeping her head down. The portrait of subservience. What more was supposed to have been? My friend was indeed watching her parents, cold indifference on her face. Asriel kept a step away, monitoring everything. I didn't let myself look too interested, too worried, as Rhys offered me a hand and we rose from the throne and went to talk of war. The council chamber of the hewn city was nearly as large as the throne room. It was carved from the same dark rock, its pillars fashioned after those entangled beasts. Far below the high domed ceiling, a mammoth table of black glass split the room in two like a lightning strike, its corners left long and jagged, sharp as a razor. Rhys claimed a seat at the head of the table. I took the one at the opposite end. Asriel and Moore found seats on one side, and Kier settled into the seat on the other. A chair beside him sat empty. Rhys leaned back in his dark chair, swirling the wine that had been poured by a stone-faced servant a moment before. It had been an effort not to thank the male who'd filled my goblet, but here, I didn't thank anyone. Here, I took what was mine, and offered no gratitude or apologies for it.
"I know why you're here," Kier said without any sort of preamble.
Oh? Rhys's eyebrow arched beautifully. Keir surveyed us, distaste lingering on his handsome face.
Hibern is swarming. Your legions,
a sneer at Asriel, at the Illyrians he represented,
are gathering.
Keir interlaced his long fingers and set them upon the dark glass.
You mean to ask for my Darkbringers to join your army?
Rhys sipped from his wine.
Well, at least you've spared me the effort of dancing around the subject.
Keir held his gaze without blinking.
I will confess that I find myself sympathetic to Hibern's cause.
Moore shifted slightly in her seat. Asriel just pinned that icy, all-seeing stare on Keir.
You wouldn't be the only one,
Rhys countered coolly. Keir frowned up at the obsidian chandelier, fashioned after a wreath of night-blooming flowers, the center of each a twinkling silver phalite.
There are many similarities between Highburn's people and my own. Both of us trapped, stagnant.
Last I checked, Moore cut in, you have been free to do as you wish for centuries. Longer.
Keir didn't so much as look at her, earning a flicker of rage from Asriel at the dismissal.
Ah, but are we free here? Not even the entirety of this mountain belongs to us. Not with your palace atop it.
All of this belongs to me, I'll remind you,
Rhys said wryly.
It's that mentality that allows me to find Highburn's stifled people to be kindred spirits.
You want the palace upstairs, Keir? Then it's yours.
Rhys crossed his legs.
I didn't know you were lusting after it for so long.
Keir's answering smile was near serpentine.
You must need my army rather desperately, Rhysand.
Again that hateful glance at Asriel.
Are the overgrown bats not up to snuff anymore?
Come train with them, Asriel said softly, and you'll learn for yourself. In his centuries of miserable existence, Keir had certainly mastered the art of sneering. And the way he sneered at Asriel? Moore's teeth flashed in the dim light. It was an effort to keep myself from doing the same.
I have no doubt,
Rhys said, the portrait of glorious boredom,
that you've already decided upon your asking price.
Keir peered down the table, to me, looked his fill as I held his stare.
I did.
My stomach turned at that gaze, the words. Dark power rumbled through the chamber, setting the onyx chandelier tinkling.
Tread carefully, Keir.
Keir only smiled at me, then at Rhys. Moore had gone utterly still.
What would you give me for a shot at this war, Rhysand? You hoard yourself to Amarantha. But what about your mate?
He had not forgotten how we'd treated him, how we'd humiliated him months ago. And Rhys, there was only eternal unforgiving death in his face, and the darkness gathering behind his chair.
The bargain our ancestors struck grants you the right to choose how and when your army assists my own, but it does not give you the right to keep your life here when I grow tired of your existence.
As if in answer, invisible claws gouged deep marks in the table, the glass shrieking. I flinched. Keir blanched at the lines now inches from him.
But I thought you might be hesitant to assist me, Rhys went on.
I'd never seen him so calm. Not calm, but filled with icy rage. The sort I sometimes glimpsed in Asriel's eyes.
Rhys snapped his fingers and said to no one in particular, Bring him in.
The doors opened on a phantom wind.
I didn't know where to look, as a servant escorted in the tall male figure.
At Moore, whose face went white with dread. At Asriel, who reached for his dagger. Truth-teller, his every breath alert, focused, but unsurprised. Not a hint of shock. Or at Eris,
heir to the Autumn Court, as he strolled into the room.
Chapter 26. That's who the final empty seat was for. And Rhys. He remained sprawled in his chair, sipping from his wine.
"Welcome back, Eris," he drawled. "It's been, what, 5 centuries since you last set foot in here?"
Moore slid her eyes toward Rhys. Betrayal and hurt. That was hurt flashing there. For not warning us. For this surprise. I wondered if I schooled my features with any more success than my friend, as Eris claimed the vacant seat at the table, not bothering to so much as nod to a wary-eyed Kier.
"It has indeed been a while."
He'd healed since that day on the ice. Not a sign of the gut wound Cassian had given him. His red hair was unbound, a silken drape over his well-tailored cobalt jacket. "What is he doing here?" I speared down the bond, not bothering to hide any of what coursed through me. "Making sure Kier agrees to help," was all Rhys said, the words tight and clipped, restrained, as if he were still holding the full might of his rage in check. Shadows curled around Asriel's shoulders, whispering in his ear as he stared down Eris.
"You once wanted to build ties to Autumn Kier," said Rhys,
setting down his goblet of wine.
"Well, here's your chance. Eris is willing to offer you a formal alliance, in exchange for your services in this war."
"How the hell did you get him to agree to that?" Rhys didn't answer. "Rhys Sand?" Kier leaned back in his chair.
"It's not enough."
Eris snorted, pouring himself a goblet of wine from the decanter in the center of the table.
"I'd forgotten why I was so relieved when our bargain fell apart the last time."
Rhys shot him a warning look. Eris just drank deeply.
"What is it that you want, then, Kier?"
Rhys purred. I had the feeling if Kier suggested me again, he'd wind up splattered on the wall. But Kier must have known, too, and said simply to Rhysand,
"I want out. I want space. I want my people to be free of this mountain."
"You have every comfort," I finally said. "And yet it is not enough." Kier ignored me as well, as I'm sure he ignored most women in his life.
"You've been keeping secrets, High Lord," Kier said with a hateful smile, interlacing his hands and resting them on the mauled table, right atop the nearest deep gouge. "I always wondered where all of you went when you weren't here." Highburn answered the question at last, thanks to that attack on... what is its name? Valaris. Yes, on Valaris, the city of starlight.
Moore went utterly still.
"I want access to the city," Kier said. "For me. And my court."
"No," Moore said. The word echoed off the pillars, the glass, the rock. I was inclined to agree. The thought of these people, of Kier and Valaris, tainting it with their presence, their hatred and small-mindedness, their disdain and cruelty. Rhys did not refuse, did not shoot down the suggestion. "You can't be serious." Rhys only watched Kier as he answered down the bond. "I anticipated this, and I took precautions." I contemplated it. The meeting with the palace governors. That was tied to this?
"Yes."
Rhysand said to Kier,
"There would be conditions."
Moore opened her mouth, but Asriel laid a scarred hand atop hers. She snatched her hand back, as if she'd been burned. Burned as he had been. Asriel's mask of cold didn't so much as waver at that rejection, though Eris chuckled softly, enough to make Asriel's hazel eyes glaze with rage as he settled them upon the High Lord's son. Eris only inclined his head to the Shadow Singer.
I want unrestricted access,
Kier said to Rhys.
You will not get it,
Rhys said.
There will be limited stays, limited numbers allowed in. To be decided later.
Moore turned pleading eyes to Rhys. Her city, the place that she loved so much. I could almost hear it. The crack I knew was about to sound amongst our own circle. Kier looked to Moore at last, noted the despair and anger, and smiled. He had no real desire to get out of here. Only a desire to take something he undoubtedly gleaned that his daughter cherished. I could have gladly shredded through his throat, as Kier said,
Done.
Rhys didn't so much as smile. Moore was only staring and staring at him, that beseeching expression crumpling her face. There is one more thing, I added, squaring my shoulders. One more request. Kier deigned to acknowledge me.
Oh?
I have need of the Ouroboros mirror, I said, willing ice into my veins. Immediately. Interest and surprise flared in Kier's brown eyes. Moore's eyes. Who told you that I have it? He asked quietly. Does it matter? I want it.
Do you even know what the Ouroboros is? Consider your tone, Kier,
Rhys warned. Kier leaned forward, bracing his forearms on the table.
The mirror?
He laughed under his breath.
Consider it my mating present,
he added with sweet venom, if you can take it. Not a threat to face him, but... What do you mean? Kier rose to his feet, smirking like a cat with a canary in his mouth.
To take the Ouroboros,
to claim it, you must first look into it. He headed for the doors, not waiting to be dismissed.
And everyone who has attempted to do so has either gone mad or been broken beyond repair. Even a high lord or two, if legend is true.
A shrug.
So it's yours, if you dare to face it.
Kier paused at the threshold as the doors opened on a phantom wind. He said to Rhys, perhaps the closest he'd come to asking for permission to leave.
Lord Thanatos is having difficulties with his daughter again. He requires my assistance.
Rhys only waved a hand, as if he hadn't just yielded our city to the male. Kier jerked his chin at Eris.
I will wish to speak with you. Soon.
Once he was done gloating over his victory tonight, what we'd given, and lost. If the Ouroboros could not be retrieved, at least without such terrible risk. I shut out the thought, sealing it away for later, as Kier left, leaving us alone with Eris. The air of autumn just sipped his wine. And I had the terrible sense that Moore had gone somewhere far, far away, as Eris set down his goblet and said,
You look well, Moore.
You don't speak to her,
Asriel said softly. Eris gave a bitter smile.
I see you're still holding a grudge.
This arrangement, Eris, Rhys said,
relies solely upon you keeping your mouth shut.
Eris huffed a laugh.
And haven't I done an excellent job? Not even my father suspected when I left tonight.
I glanced between my mate and Eris. How did this come about? Eris looked me over. The crown and dress.
You didn't think that I knew your shadow singer would come sniffing around to see if I'd told my father about your powers? Especially after my brother so mysteriously forgot about them, too. I knew it was a matter of time before one of you arrived to take care of my memory as well.
Eris tapped the side of his head with a long finger.
Too bad for you I learned a thing or two about Demati. Too bad for my brothers that I never bothered to teach them.
My chest tightened. Rhys. To keep me safe from Baron's wrath,
to keep this potential alliance with the High Lords from falling apart before it began. Rhys. It was an effort to keep my eyes from burning. A gentle caress down the bond was his only answer. Of course, I didn't tell my father, Eris went on, drinking from his wine again. Why waste that sort of information on the bastard? His answer would be to hunt you down and kill you, not realizing how much shit we're in with Highburn, and that you might be the key to stopping it.
So he plans to join us, then, Rhys said.
Not if he learns about your little secret, Eris smirked. Moore blinked, as if realizing that Rhys's contact with Eris, his invitation here, the glance she gave me, clear and settled, told me enough. Hurt and anger still swirled, but understanding too.
So what's the asking price, Eris? Moore demanded, leaning her bare arms on the glass. Another little bride for you to torture?
Something flickered in Eris's eyes.
I don't know who fed you those lies to begin with, Morrigan, he said with vicious calm. Likely the bastards you surround yourself with.
A sneer at Asriel. Moore snarled, rattling the glasses.
You never gave any evidence to the contrary. Certainly not when you left me in those woods.
There were forces at work that you have never considered, Eris said coldly, and I am not going to waste my breath explaining them to you. Believe what you want about me.
You hunted me down like an animal, I cut in. I think we'll choose to believe the worst.
Eris's pale face flushed.
I was given an order, and sent to do it with two of my brothers. And what of the brother you hunted down alongside me? The one whose lover you helped to execute before his eyes.
Eris laid a hand flat on the table.
You know nothing about what happened that day. Nothing.
Silence.
Indulge me, was all I said.
Eris stared me down. I stared right back.
How do you think he made it to the spring border?
He said quietly.
I wasn't there when they did it. Ask him. I refused. It was the first and only time I have denied my father anything. He punished me, and by the time I got free, they were going to kill him, too. I made sure they didn't. Made sure Tamlin got word, anonymously, to get the hell over to his own border.
Where two of Eris's brothers had been killed. By Lucian and Tamlin. Eris picked at a stray thread on his jacket.
Not all of us were so lucky in our friends and family as you, Rhysand.
Rhys's face was a mask of boredom.
It would seem so.
And none of this entirely erased what he'd done, but... What is the asking price? I repeated.
The same thing I told Asriel when I found him snooping through my father's woods yesterday.
Hurt flared in Moore's eyes as she whipped her head toward the Shadow Singer. But Asriel didn't so much as acknowledge her as he announced.
When the time comes, we are to support Eris's bid to take the throne.
Even as Asriel spoke, that frozen rage dulled his face, and Eris was wise enough to finally pale at the sight. Perhaps that was why Eris had kept knowledge of my powers to himself. Not just for this sort of bargaining, but to avoid the wrath of the Shadow Singer. The blade at his side.
The request still stands, Rhysand,
Eris said, mastering himself.
To just kill my father and be done with it. I can pledge troops right now.
Mother above! He didn't even try to hide it. To look at all remorseful.
It was an effort to keep my jaw from dropping to the table at his intent. The casualness with which he spoke it.
Tempting, but too messy. Rhys replied.
Baron sided with us in the war. Hopefully, he'll sway that way again.
A pointed stare at Eris.
He will,
Eris promised, running a finger over one of the claw marks gouged into the table.
and will remain blissfully unaware.